Before we start today's episode, there's something important for agencies seeking a reliable way to attract new business, especially during busy periods. I want to introduce you to Leadflow Sprint. It's an eight-week program that simplifies your marketing and consistently attracts the attention of potential clients without requiring a massive marketing budget or external sales teams. With my 17 years of experience in aiding agencies to gain visibility and new clients, this program offers a practical and effective approach to lead generation. Forget about unpredictable leads and embrace a method that works across different agency sizes. And if you're keen to learn more, you need to visit caffeine.club/LFS. That's caffeen.club/L for Lima, F for Foxtrot, S for Sierra. Now let's get into today's episode.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Hardy, founder and creative director at Manifesto Studios. 9 years young, Manifesto is a self-ascribed brand and communications accelerator. They're a consultancy and design studio specializing in collaborating with challenger brands. Their client list includes Samsung, Red Bull, Vashi Jewelry, Savse, where previous Caffeine Espresso podcast guest Natasha Litton was marketing lead, Milo Lingerie and Padella, one of London's hottest restaurants, which my husband looks at longingly every time we're near the Shard. Prior to Manifesto Studios, Tom accumulated his years of experience at prestigious brand design agencies like Interbrand, Fitch, Rufus Leonard, Lambie Nairn, and more. Having worked with Tom when I was the client, I can safely say that he's one of the nicest and most chilled and yet ambitious people I've come across in design. I'm pleased to say that Manifesto Studios thrived in 2020. In fact, it has adapted so well on the remote setup that Tom has recently taken it to a new level, having moved to Mexico while continuing to lead his agency. I'm confident you'll come away from this episode inspired how to make current circumstances fuel your passion for growth rather than diminish it. Just a point before we get stuck into this podcast, just bear in mind that Tom is in Mexico, sitting on a beach on the Pacific coast in Oaxaca, and you can hear some birds tweeting in the background. Enjoy them, because if you're anything like me, you've only heard ground sparrows for the last 4 months in your back garden. And another point is that the connection does go a bit fuzzy about three times during this recording. I didn't pause and re-record those sections because I think you can still figure out what's going on. But just bear in mind that's because of the distance we're traveling over and slightly unreliable internet connection in the bar that Tom was based in at the time that we spoke, not the one that he normally conducts all his business meetings in. So without further ado, I'll let you get back to the podcast. So Tom, welcome to the Caffeine Espresso podcast. It's so nice to have you here and finally have a catch up. It must be 3 years or more since we last spoke.
Thank you. Yes, it flies, doesn't it? I think especially after the last year, the time's kind of disappeared.
Yes.
Our relationship with it has changed a lot.
Just a big gaping hole in my memory of things that didn't happen. But so, but I'm really keen to hear more about how Manifesto Studios grew in 2020, and just give me a potted summary of what's been going on for you growth-wise over the past year.
Sure. Brexit was really challenging for us, like a lot of companies. Investors were withholding funds, and a number of clients we were having trouble. We were working with were having trouble committing to payments, which is tricky. So we spent 2019, I think that's the year, putting huge amounts of work into successfully rebuilding the client base. So when COVID hit, it actually felt like we'd had the best training and we could survive anything. And that was a bit unexpected, because it was almost like, oh, is it going to be like fear or positivity? It was like, you know, we worked so hard, we've done such a good job, it feels like we can survive anything. So that was a nice kind of insight. And then another sort of factor has been our positioning as a studio is designed, well, we call it designing positive futures. And a few years ago, we realized that to have the most impact and to really support businesses, you know, looking ahead over the next 5, 10 years and beyond, it's just essential to have high impact brand strategy, brand identity, and like digital capability, like under your roof, like one roof as a core team, as a studio. Because, you know, we want to, if you're defining a brand story, you're creating a, you know, codifying a visual system to bring it like to life, And then you're focusing on the priority deliverable, which in the future, you know, without a doubt, and now is website. Like that's just a must. So when COVID hit, everyone in the world, every brand basically needs to redefine their story, make sure the visual language brought it to life and their messaging like represented it, and then bring it to life digitally. Because no one, you know, digital was the, you know, it's almost like it fast forwarded us, right? And everyone needed digital to make digital work really hard. So part of our growth was really down to all the hard work we've done positioning ourselves around this positive futures and the insights that you need this capability in-house, and then building a team, you know, the last sort of 3-5 years to make sure that we can do it. And that really paid dividends. Because yeah. We were really well positioned for what clients needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess you also don't have the added expense of having to bring in freelancers when you have to add a certain discipline that you don't have in-house into the brief.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really tricky because we talk a lot as a studio about being better, not bigger. And yeah. I remember doing a talk once at Soho House, and then one of my, you know, I was a bit kind of younger. I was a bit kind of like, yeah, pow, this is what I think, but it's true. But I had this, remember having this slide saying, growth for growth's sake is the ideology of the cancer cell.
Whoa, so true.
But it's kind of true, right? I remember reading this great article, maybe it was 2 summers ago, in the last summer in The Guardian by George Monbiot, who's an amazing writer. And he just had this one sentence, he just laid out like the real challenges of capitalism. You know, I'm not saying that we've got an effective new solution. I think there's nothing wrong with, you know, a thriving business. Business has great value to offer the world and society. But he said, you know, growth for growth's sake in a world which is finite, there's a point where there's just going to be some very serious issues. And it's a really it's a really good logic, you know.
it's manifesting in so many ways now, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Client traits do you feel were most appreciated by your team internally during this trying time? What was it about the kind of clients that you're working with who really kind of helped you to get through this period and meant you bonded well together despite the distances?
Yes, there's a few different factors. But the biggest one I would say was one of the reasons we founded the studio. You know, my background, as you mentioned, is about working with a lot of sort of larger high profile agencies. There's some wonderful people, really talented people. But what I often found is that the most talented people that you're working with are either frustrated and want to leave, have got a side hustle, or aren't quite connected with the work that they're doing. And so you find there's like sort of like an A team that kind of like really clicks, works on together, but there's a cycle of like, you know, them not being there forever or like a long time. And from my experience, you know, being in that team and like being on a pitch team and that environment, it's kind of exciting, but you're a bit frustrated. And you're more passionate than the clients. And that feels like a really just like a very ineffective model if you're thinking about long term. So, you know, I realized that, okay, if we're going to build something and, you know, let's build like a really simple model. Again, it's like a really nice, naive like business plan when you're, you know, freelancing or a consultant. And it was like, I just want to work with like the most talented people with clients who are as passionate as we are and doing work that has value. And that was basically the setup for Manifesto Studios 9 years ago. So it worked. What I had to learn is how to get the finances to work in that model. But it is possible. And I think that's really what's helped us to galvanize the team together, because everyone's got that shared purpose. Like we all care about, you know, doing work that has a positive impact, or working on projects that has the opportunity to have a benefit for like society or you know, the world around us, or things that we're just passionate about that allow us to grow and learn as much as our, you know, clients and our clients' customers. So I think that's been the biggest thing, just that attitude. And it's meant that we've been able to like be supportive with clients, like get creative about how they could use their IP to, you know, pivot their business model. You mentioned Padella. We've done, you know, the guys there are super bright and they've come up with some great ideas, and we've been working with them to, you know, do their delivery model online and you know, international delivery, and they've been doing a great, great job.
International great delivery, product. Wow.
Sorry, national. I'm just getting optimistic because I'm in Mexico.
Well, I didn't even realise they were doing delivery, so I'm going to be checking this out. I'm not,
yeah,
not too far like away.
I mean, they're so cool. They're such great, bright guys. They're really inspiring. And you know, it that comes back to the passion. Like, you know, it's our attitude to do that. And by working with clients like them and many others, you have that attitude. Like, you want to do a good job with them.
Yeah.
And it's that, I find that really inspiring. But, you know, you're less likely to get that with, I don't know, if you're working with some credit agents, you know, or some huge finance organization that's indirectly enslaving the third world or trying to get you into credit there. You know, and I think that, you know, creativity is essentially about solving problems. And there's a point where you have to ask, what problems do I want to divert all of my energy into to help solve?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the passion of your clients. Are there any other features of your clients that you feel have really been valued by your team internally over the last year? I mean, you mentioned the intelligence of the guys at Padella and how bright they are and wanting to pivot.
I think it's a combination of perhaps what makes, you know, I think that makes a good creative. I think curiosity, ambition, and I think being open as well, that really helps. I think we very often in a new business situation, you can get a sense whether it feels like someone wants to really share what they're great at and really understand what you're great at, and whether it feels a bit more like an old school interview in a boardroom that's like us and them. And, you know, we're very much of the like, we want to learn about you. We've got loads of skills that we can, and expertise that we can help support you with. Let's be on this journey together. And I think that openness is a great setup to produce the best work, because then you really are a team and in it together. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, we've had like taken investment in some companies we've worked in, or just being quite creative about how we like demonstrate support. So I think that it's really the attitude of the clients that's been everything in helping us to feel motivated and produce our best work, which we have done over the last year, quite surprisingly, but very happy it's been the case.
Well done. Well done. And actually, you raise an interesting point. I think, you know, it's a great name, Manifesto Studios. And maybe I'm now, after our conversation, which is way more in depth than we've had a conversation about your business before, maybe I'm beginning to understand why it's called that in the first place, because you've started it with a very clear vision about who you want to work with, both internally and externally, client side and you know, your employees and colleagues internally. Have you ever been in a situation where you've said no to a client who's approached you because you do feel uncomfortable about the state of the relationship, as in it feels quite boardroomy and it doesn't feel like you're going to have the cooperative kind of relationship that you know you need in order to produce the level of work that you're satisfied with?
It's a really good question. I'd say that we're really open and we're really happy to see how, you know, also it's like dating, isn't it? Like it's an early relationship. You need to sort of see how it works and give people the benefit of the doubt and be open. So, you know, we wouldn't say no because of like the vibe, unless someone felt like very aggressive or just like it was a very, you know, it felt like a really big misfit, but I'm sure they would feel it too, but unlikely.
Yes.
What is more the case is if there's a project where we feel like we don't feel like as a team we can put, it's quite connects with what our interests and passions are, and we're very broad in the type of things we work with, and also we try. I think the danger of this attitude is like the last thing we want to do is like virtue signal. And it's up to no one to tell anyone else like what they should and shouldn't do. And that's really important. But like as a team, there's certain things we're passionate about. So an example would be, I don't know, there was in that Brexit year that I mentioned, that was we were rebuilding our client base. We had an opportunity for a huge, like really well-paid job for a vaping company. And, you know, I smoke like, you know, rolling tobacco at the weekend. So, you know, I smoke, and so I can't be like morally opposed to it. But then you start to dig into it and you think, well, actually, the way it was being positioned, essentially, it's about trying to get like teenagers addicted to nicotine. And you've got to ask yourself, okay, well, we might need the money, but like, what, you know,
at what cost?
At what cost? And do you know what? A side point to that is, like, I found that running a business, that there's very quick, when you look at your cash flow, you know, look at your what's coming in, what's going out over, say, like 3 months, 6 months, a year, there's a point where obviously your outgoings is going to be like, you know, the cost of running the business is going to be more than the predicted income, because you can't predict things over, say, like a year or something. So you learn very quickly about, okay, if I'm doing this and there's a point in the future, say a year or 6 months, wherever, where your balance is zero, then why are you doing it? Because money is like completely, like, you know, like, doesn't really exist, like, getting too existential. But then with that mindset, it's just had this moment of clarity. It's like, well, you have to care about what you're doing. And I've actually found that really reassuring, as to kind of make sure you're focusing on things that you care about. And the last point I was going to add is that, it's definitely about experimenting what's right. And I remember very clearly about 8 years ago, when there was this, you know, start the first couple of years of starting up, and there was a very big fast food retailer who we were asked to pitch for. And I thought about it, said yes, didn't get the job at the time. I was quite thankful afterwards, but, you know, I would have loved to have got it, because we really needed the cash.
Yeah.
So I think it's a learning thing, and a definitely a non-judgment thing about yourself, about, you know, what's right for you, what to care about.
Something on that I was just thinking as you were talking was, you know, just the nature of the name again, Manifesto, and you, very open person and very warm person, but also have very some very clear pillars in the business that you're hoping to kind of touch on, and with the different clients that you take on. And my experience has been, by saying that you're for a particular niche, or that you're you do a particular thing, rather than try and be everything to everyone, and also just let your personality flow, let the attitude of the company flow, rather than hold it back and be ultra reserved or corporate. I think that's really, really useful tool in helping clients to self-select themselves to work with you as well, and it can help maybe deflect away some of the clients that aren't the right fit for you. And I feel like agencies who are afraid to be themselves and let their attitude show through are kind of doing themselves an injustice, because you're in positions sometimes where you need the money and you do kind of need to take the projects, but when you're in a comfortable position, it's good to just let your kind of your personality flow, because then naturally you'll magnetize the kind of clients that you want to be working with and repel the ones that you don't want to be working with. That's my experience, and I didn't think it would. Somebody once told me that years ago, and I thought, no, it's just a case of getting the work, you know, get the balance sheet looking good. But it really does work, and it makes working a joy when you have the right kind of clients on board. So
yeah, you're right, I really connect with that. And I think that there's definitely, I think there's a starting to be a bit of a change, but I've noticed that design agencies have very often got quite utilitarian branding, because, you know, they're holding all of their other brands' work, and there's almost like they're kind of devoid of personality. And it makes sense logically, because it's quite a lot for clients to get their head around when you're trying to get the design agencies or studios brand, and then their works brands within that. It's kind of quite nested. But we're like, I totally agree with your point. We're actually in the process of updating our brand identity to add a lot more personality in. And it's a great time to do it, because it's about getting the personality and expertise we've got from the mix of our team and sharing that with clients. So it feels like a no-brainer to actually communicate it more heavily to exactly do that, to help clients self-select and to be more accurate about communicating. You know, that's what we're in the industry to do. So it feels like you're doing a disservice to yourselves and to clients if you're not communicating as clearly as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think tone of voice for me, and just the way you behave in meetings and on calls, is like one of the most crucial things. But yeah, I understand the challenge of not just using Helvetica to put your brand, your agency identity out there, just because you're holding so many other brands that have got so much going on. Yeah, I can see that challenge visually. I mean, what people can't see as we're talking, maybe they can kind of sense through the little tweetings of exotic birds in the background. And I do need to take a screenshot before we finish, so I can picture where you are, because I'm in absolutely miserable at East London and you're in this idyllic location. You're actually in Mexico currently, on the Pacific coast of Mexico. And I wanted to ask you about your move there, and whether you think moving there, even if it's temporarily, would have happened if 2020 had been a different story.
No, in a nutshell, I don't think it would have happened at all. It's been a really interesting process. I've got a couple of amazing like business mentors who have run and sold some very successful, well-known companies. And I was speaking to one of them about a year and a half ago, and he asked me the question, which is a lovely question to be asked by a founder. I think friends or founders should ask founders this question. What's your dream working day look like? Like, how, if you can be really blue sky, what does your future look like, your future of work? And I remember thinking back to, you know, traveling 10 years ago around Southeast Asia for 5 months and then living in Sydney as working as design director, and enjoying that, and then realizing that I actually really love work and needed purpose. And then I was thinking about, okay, well, I love London, you know, I've been here for 20 years, I you know, really enjoy it, get a lot from it. But I'm getting to the point where I need to be, or I really get a lot from being in nature. And it's a great way to manage a huge workload that keep motivated. So it's like nature and community and design, like three criteria. So I was, in my head, I was thinking, well, I'd love to experience being abroad again. I'd love to keep running the company. And I basically just want to live in a treehouse with fiber optic cable. And I remembered this thought whilst I was looking at a beach in Oaxaca in Mexico with fiber optic cable, just finishing a meeting. And I was like, okay, cool. thank you universe. But yeah, I just think it's the time. I'm saying to the team and everyone, as even in my email sign off, I think it's such an important time to get creative about how to interact with the world. Really privileged to be able to do it with, I don't know, everything from like a British passport being a position where I don't have too many commitments in London outside of business and friend networks, which I care deeply about, to be able to be here. But then at the same time, I think I also am grateful for the decisions I've made over periods of time and bravery, and sometimes quite difficult to just be able to be here. And I think just acknowledging those two has been quite important to try and make the most of the opportunities that I've got, to feel like in the situation I'm in, it'd be a crime not to do it. I feel super motivated, with the most motivated I've ever felt with work in a couple of years. The work's going really well. We're interacting with the team remotely really well. So it feels like there's no reason not to explore it for a few more months at the least, to see how it continues to go.
And just a bit of a side note on that, what are there any specific tools that you're using with the team that you think is helping to keep you together particularly well? I mean, I know we're all working remotely, and really the distance kind of doesn't matter when we're working remotely. But, you know, I'm guessing Slack's probably a feature, and Zoom obviously as well. Is there anything that you're particularly depending on as a team?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Actually, we thanks very much to Gina, our strategic account manager, like that after we went into lockdown, we were set up like the next day. It was quite remarkable. We were working the next day, everyone was set up remotely, we were running the meetings, and it just worked. And it's quite surprising, I think, because we had a huge, beautiful space in the Paper Mill Studios, which is a bit like sort of Shoreditch House, and Jamie Oliver's got his kitchen there, and it was a space where we had like interactive workshops, you know, physically, and it was about trying to let people feel relaxed to get like the best insights out. It's all quite strategically done to let, you know, clients relax and just get the best insights, because the best insights you get, the more authentically you can create a brand, which means it's going to connect with customers better. So without that, I was very intrigued, but we just realized that it was our personalities and how we are and the curiosity that was the energy, and it wasn't so much just the building. And I think that has been a big thing, like how you run meetings, like you mentioned, as you mentioned earlier, it's a big part of that. In terms of tactical tools, yes, we use Slack for like in-project conversations, like emails for big things. We have a team stand up every day, which is to run around and to check if there's any blockers or anything. We use Trello for projects, so people can see, so I get visibility of what everyone's prioritizing, what they're working on. and we've got visibility on that across like operational things. And then what we've got is we set up a few different meeting rooms. So we call them the same thing. So we've got like the studio, we've got the kitchen, and we've got the meeting room. And we use those as kind of like as mental headspace to as have different things. So like if we're catching up as a team, you know, it might be the kitchen where we can have an informal chat. We might be eating our lunch together remotely. Or if it's the meeting room, it will be where we're, you know, there's quite a focused thing to do. And it might be intense or like in a positive way, or it might be like a brainstorm. So that's been quite helpful. And then the last tactical tool is just a digital whiteboard, which has been great. I can't remember the name, but I think it's the one through Envision. But just using that as a way to collaborate with clients has been great. Get references, throw them up there. It's just like a whiteboard, but better because it's recorded. So we've actually found no difference. We've hugely delighted that's been the case. And if anything, it's actually helped us to move, move quicker with like meetings and getting insights faster. I'd say the biggest challenge has been as a creative director with creative director hat on has been giving feedback, because a lot of it's about, you know, juxtaposition about, okay, well that bit from there and then that, you know, tone of voice and that route's great and let's bring that together. And actually what Amy had on her screen over there is really relevant to what Liam's working on. Like those, that bringing together is harder. So what I've done, I'm going to share it because I don't know, I hope it helps someone. I've got like a live feedback document. So what I do is got a really simple keynote. And whilst people are presenting, I do screen grabs, put things together, mix them together. So it's almost like kind of a live mood board, so I can help to like point things like as we're speaking on the fly. And that's been really helpful. And then the learning for me has been to just check when that's useful or when it's good to just sit on the work and feedback at a later date.
Yeah. 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 It's really interesting. As you're saying that, I'm thinking you kind of need the world's biggest screen so you can have multiple desktops at the same time to view the work at the same time. But, you know, the practicalities of doing that on a beach in Mexico are somewhat limited.
Even just working remotely in general, you know. But I do think, you know, at first, I thought, oh, it's quite tricky to do this, you know, like while I was in London, to, you know, just trying to do the creative direction part. But I was saying to the team, it's like, if you can do this, it's basically a PhD in whatever you do. Like, it's the greatest thing about creativity. Like, it's the reason many of us in the creative side are designers and not artists. It's about having that restraint is a huge driver for being creative. So the fact that we've got these limitations makes us more creative in different ways, you know. And I think that's it's just a challenge. It's like, okay, the creative brief is you can't meet in person, solve it. Fine, it's a brief, and we, you know, you did. And how do you get? Yeah. How do you solve it creatively? You know, okay, well, I'd actually tested working remotely in Greece for 5 weeks in the summer, and I learned actually going east is great because you're, you know, you're living in the future. Going west from a time zone perspective is a bit more difficult because of the time zone. Gina did the same. She worked in Dubai with her partner and went out there for 5 weeks. It's just experimenting, you know, and trying what works. And just, we felt like we've landed on something that's really positive, and we're, you know, encouraging people to work remotely in our team and being mindful of the time zone crossovers. So we have, hopefully that's a helpful thing to mention. What we've done is we found that other people might feel the same. Gina and I especially were having moments where we were having like 8-hour Zoom calls with clients a day. It's just not healthy. I think a lot of it, we did a lot of research psychologically, and a lot of it's about, we all know that 90% of communication is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing Zoom calls, you're trying to pick up on those visual cues that aren't there, and it makes you more tired. And so what we've decided to do is have 4 hours of maximum of 4 hours of meetings each day. And that's great for two reasons. One, it keeps you mentally like agile and alive for those meetings and for the next day. And secondly, it allows you a good block of time to focus on the work that you need to be doing yourself without all being like in meetings. And that means you get, I don't know, you might have read that, you know, that deep thinking book, you know, it allows you to do the deep thinking. Where you really get all of the like the high quality work done. So it's a double benefit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my husband in particular is really struggling, works in finance, and it's a very, very different world, and they're really struggling with not having the meetings face to face, and he's spending upwards of 6 hours a day on the phone, not doing his actual work. He's like, when am I going to get my work done? And it's, we're almost at a year now. So, yeah. You know, your creative problem solving, I'm sure, has really, you know, set you at an advantage. And on that note, how have your goals and ambitions for the agency changed after the roller coaster of last year? Do you feel like you've got more ambitious, or do you feel like it's become more of a balance towards getting a balance in life and work?
It's a good question. I also think that challenging times are a great way to trust to test a strategy, and it really hasn't changed our positioning or our kind of mission at Manifesto Studios. It's just helped us to double down on it. And if I go back to that, you know, like kind of really beautifully naive business plan that I had about, you know, doing work you care about for people that make a positive impact, you know, with a team of experts, and it's still that. It's just that the landscape has changed. I'd say that what it has done is fast forwarded the possibilities about how you can do it effectively, and it has augmented the landscape I'd say that the new normal in general has just taught us about how to let go, you know, how to let go mm-hmm. of that sense of control that we don't really have, you know, thinking about people in hospitality or restaurant, you know, restaurateurs that we work with, no fault of their own. The market has completely changed. But what you can have control over is your attitude and how you approach it. You know, it's like I've been describing it as like an earthquake. When you have, and you know, you might get a tsunami, and it's your choice whether you're kind of under it or whether you're surfing it. And you know, I find that the clients we're working with, and we've just been surfing it and trying to make the very best of that hugely challenging landscape that has changed.
Yeah, great. And I just have a couple more questions. One is, what is your favorite business book? Would it be Deep Thinking?
Oh, it's a good question. Do you know what? Actually, it's a bit like, I mean, I've got like all the Harvard, you know, business view books. There's some great insights in there, and there's some you know, good podcasts, like, you know, like yours and some other ones that are just great to get insights from other people. I have to say that I think the best reference is not business books, it's from other areas. So it's a bit like creative direction, I think, or the creative references. We encourage people not to get on the standard design blogs. It's like, I don't know, look at a musician's interview or read an autobiography or do some research into ancient, like, Mayan culture or, I don't know, tribalism and communities. And I think being quite creative about where you get inspiration is quite helpful. And that comes down to the fact that essentially business books are based on like people's individual experiences of how they run their businesses, but every business is different. So if you want to have a very different vision, you kind of need to pick up a different things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I read quite a lot, but I wouldn't say I have a favorite one. I'm just going
to
pin it down.
I love your answer. And I'm just thinking, you know, the way I used to collect things like a magpie creatively to feed myself was going to galleries and museums and the library. And now I'm limited to what I'm reading. And I get a copy of The Week every week. I don't know if you're familiar with that newspaper.
Yes,
they have a roundup of the reviews across various different things. So I'm like, that's basically like my window into what's going on in the world. I mean, I do have a 2.5-year-old in tow, so I don't have that much free
goodness.
Time.
I mean, that's
elsewhere.
absolutely, but, right. That's a huge like life education.
But yeah, maybe that's helping. I don't know.
For sure. I mean, I've got two come to mind actually. I remember Courier magazine being like a great sort of insight, like practically about what's happening. Like that, I've always been a huge fan of that. It's just a, you know, really great publication for getting insights into startups and what's happening. So it's not really a book, but like as an insight to the current market, that's great. And I'd also say, as kind of my go-to one, or often I reference to clients a lot or to the team, is probably the Harvard Business Review on communication, especially the first essay. And what that talks about is how it's basically, I'm just absolutely fascinated by the psychology of communication. And it's a really great short essay that just talks about how different people read information. It helps you just to understand the fact that everyone sees the world in such a different way. Mm-hmm. And as the designer or as communicators, we need to really understand that and see what it means for how we communicate as a brand to people who have, you know, so many different viewpoints and analyze the world in such unique ways. So that's a great book to really understand that on communication.
Brilliant. And then my final question is, who should get in contact with you and when? I'm imagining brands who are ambitious and smart.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. That's so passionate people trying to make a difference with their products and service. And it's simple as that, really. Like, we've been so grateful that having the kind of the positioning and the manifesto to trying to do positive work has helped us to be in contact increasingly with companies that we're more and more connected with. It's a nice kind of lesson that we're going in the right direction, and I'm sure that will evolve and change. But we've had so many interesting conversations, and it's always great just to chat with brands, just to see if there's a good fit, and just to share some ideas and help support businesses. I think, you know, I read this other great quote recently that said that, you know, essentially all business was set up to do is to support your, you know, team financially and to help them grow and to support your local community. And although we're in a global community, it's a lovely thought about, you know, it's not really about, you know, the finance. And I think you're going to feel quite empty if that's your biggest driver. Yes, it's hugely important to be able to support your business. But if you're in a position where you're working, have a real interest in the purpose, and you're connected with clients that have share that purpose, then you're in, you know, you've got a recipe to produce something that's really awesome.
Yeah, and enduring, something that you're going to enjoy for a long period of time.
Absolutely.
I've made the mistake of founding a business not on that before, and it doesn't work out, trust me. So, yeah, very relieved to be working in something I'm very passionate about this time around.
Yeah, good for you.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. It's been really, really good to catch up and just hear where you're at, and just so good to know that Manifesto is going from strength to strength, and I wish you all the best with it. To catch up face to face at some point in the future, but also really want you to enjoy your travels for as long as possible.
For sure. Yeah, it's been really lovely to catch up, and thanks so much for inviting me on. I think it's another great way of that you're doing that I'm really behind about, just having those conversations and being creative and seeing how to support businesses and keep those conversations going in a landscape that's changing so much. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just before we wrap up, I want to touch on a crucial opportunity for your agency's growth. As a creative agency, your primary focus should be on delivering exceptional work, not getting bogged down in sales and marketing. And that's where Lead Flow Sprint comes in. It's an 8-week program designed to streamline your lead generation process, bringing in a steady flow of potential clients to you. No more struggling with the ups and downs of trying to gain the attention of new business. Our program includes hands-on support, including direct input on your copywriting, ensuring a bespoke approach to your lead generation needs. No more feeling stuck in the feast or famine cycle. Our real-time support, including direct feedback on tasks like copywriting, helps you to bid farewell to inconsistent leads and embrace a lead generation system that's tailored to your unique needs. Visit caffeine.club/LFS. That's KAFFEN.club/L for Lima, F for Foxtrot, S for Sierra.